Phantom Computers. This is Intelligent Performance.
Daniel Flynn, welcome to the Intelligent Performance Podcast. What an absolute pleasure to have you here. For those who don't know, the founder of Thank You, a brand which I love, huge respect for, and it's just a pleasure to have you on here to talk about all things like non or counterintuitive thinking, which I think is, when it comes to business, we probably don't talk enough about, and especially around purpose. So firstly, Dan, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. First question with all guests is, what's your take on intelligent performance?
Intelligent performance. I would love to have the best answer of all guests that have come on, but I haven't actually checked. To me, my mind straight away goes to considered performance. So we all talk about high performance and growth and hyper growth, and that's the goal. But to me, intelligence speaks to consideration, and it speaks to design, which I think to have considered and well-designed performance probably means more work in the background, in the foundation before, you know, the tower goes up, so to speak.
I think it's a great answer, and I think it will also speak to a lot about what we're going to talk about, you know. And so the question I want to start with for you is, really, you've built a purpose-based business, and the question is purpose good for business?
I feel like if I came out and said no, that would be a bombshell. We at Thank You are all about purpose, and from day one, we set this up as a mission and as a purpose with a business model to fuel that, and we have seen the power of purpose and how it unlocks some of the most incredible innovation, some of the most remarkable growth. And so our experience is absolutely yes. And then we've seen it in other businesses. We see the difference between a purpose-led organization and one that isn't. Or in this day and age, one that says it is but actually isn't. So I think purpose changes everything, and I do think it's often misunderstood.
Misunderstood, or is it misapplied?
Yeah. Such a better phrase, you know, professional. There's no, but it's misapplied, because I think often, and we've talked about this a bit at Thank You, this idea that purpose is, it's not the paint that's on the outside. It's the fuel on the inside.
Interesting.
And often a company thinks, man, all right, purpose is the new thing. All right, get the purpose paint out. Let's go. Right. So the internal walls get a fresh coat of purpose paint. The external walls, purpose, purpose, purpose. We've discovered that purpose is the fuel that drives the people on the inside to innovate better, to maybe do their life's best work. And so when you can unlock purpose at that level, that's when you see the benefit of it. A company that's like, we did a purpose campaign, we haven't seen any change. It's like, cool. Consumers can smell the fresh purpose paint, and so too can team.
Yeah. I can imagine the team would be the hardest ones to trick, as it were. Just given that they're having to deliver it, and they would really start to smell the BS, as it were, right?
Yeah.
Just briefly, for those who are unfamiliar with Thank You, we stock your products in terms of use them. We used them, washed our hands this morning with that. And just tell us a little bit about Thank You, just so people understand, maybe put those two and two together, because I'm sure, given the prevalence of your product in Australia and also more globally now, that people would know of the brand, but maybe not necessarily know they're using necessarily. So give us a bit of insight to Thank You.
Okay. So look, for those that don't know, we are a social enterprise that sells consumer product, like originally bottled water, which we may get into talking about, Thank You Water, and then we remove that. We have a whole bunch of now 70 products, so hand washes, body washes, cleaning range, deodorants, and we design products that for us are about reimagining consumerism. So product that's really good for you, good for the planet, but then it's our profit that exists all for the end of extreme poverty. So we set up a business owned 100% by a charitable trust, and each year we distribute those profits from the trust out to our impact partners. And today we've raised $18.1 million. And a lot of people buy Thank You Hand Wash in, you know, Coles or Woolworths or Chemist Warehouse, and some know what they're getting themselves into. Mm. Others don't, according to our research. Right. You know, some just buy because I like it. I like being thanked by my hand wash. And we're okay with that because later when people do discover this is a revolutionary business model for this environment, it's exciting.
Reimagining consumerism, is that what you said?
Yeah. I mean, that's the goal here. How do you reimagine consumerism for good? And it actually goes back to the Genesis moment with Thank You for me, where I was 19, I was in front of my computer, tears streaming down my face, and watching stories of kids who didn't have access to clean water. Some of them talk about their brothers and sisters dying from waterborne disease. And I was crying because it was moving, but I let my mind go, what if that was me? And then I thought, well, Jess and Mel, my sisters, if they died, and then I found out it was the water that I got them that killed them, how do I live with that? And so I saw the world water crisis, which is a big part of extreme poverty. Then I saw another number that said we spent in 2008 $50 billion on bottled water. I'm like, well, there it is. Mm. Everything that's wrong with the world. One world, two extremes. And so the first idea was, what if we launched a brand of water, a product that is so ridiculous and should not exist, but what if we launched one that gave the profit to funding water projects? And today when we describe Thank You, it's the same idea. One world, two extremes. 716 million people living in extreme poverty and $63 trillion spent by you, me, everyone on product as consumers. Mm. So we see ourselves as a bridge. How do we reimagine the $63 trillion to right some of the world's wrongs, these inequality gaps that shouldn't exist?
It seems like such a simple, like, no-brainer idea in many ways, sure. Right? The execution, though, is in any business, it's everything. Yeah. What's it been like? You've been in this journey...
I don't want to even say out loud, 15 years.
15 years, okay, cool. So what have you changed your mind on?
So much. But interestingly, never on the mission.
Interesting.
And never on the idea.
So you got it right at the beginning in terms of you were clear that, okay, this is what. But then, so what's changed then? Because
the method, the how to reach the mission. Now, there's an amazing principle in strategy development. And I believe in particular in military kind of planning, they talk about, so you have your plan, right, to achieve the objective. Mm. But the moment the battle starts, the plan was great, but there are going to be shifts and things that happen that you did not see coming.
Yeah.
And so what's ultimately the most important is true north, because how you get there may shift. And so at Thank You, I would describe our last 15 years, if you want to get like in a business sort of, which strategy philosophy did you follow? At the beginning, we had no idea what a business strategy philosophy was. Yeah. But I would call it emergent strategy, which is that the true north never changed. And we would set out on a path thinking, here's how we're going to get there. And then we'd learn something new, a new piece of feedback that would often come from failure. Mm. We see those two words as one. Failure is feedback from the market, from customers, from ourselves. And we would take that feedback to inform, okay, we know the mission, seeing the end of extreme poverty, and we know there's an untapped huge amount of money sitting in consumerism. Mm. We're going to find a way to unlock it. We're going to keep going. And so we've changed our mind many times on that journey, like deleting our Genesis product, water, a highly profitable line, selling millions of dollars of product. But ultimately, we started to see that product become at war with the mission we were on.
How so?
So when we first started in bottled water from day one, 2008, we said bottled water is a silly product because we thought that. It's a mirror to society, and the reflection's not good.
And you say silly, what? Because
well, you get tap water for free. Now, if we zoom out globally, yes, there are some contexts.
Yeah,
you can't access clean water.
Makes a lot of sense,
right? But ultimately, for it to be the fastest growing beverage category and a whole bunch of stuff, when water's, you know, in our country, you can get it for free. We probably should be using a reusable bottle, but instead single-use plastic, millions and millions and millions and hundreds of millions of bottles a year. In Australia, not even the world's billions.
And we're shipping it from an industrialized country like France.
Yeah, I mean, just shout out to Evian for that one. You know, just to kind of brand kudos for that. Like, it's and Fiji to the world, and it's like,
yeah.
And bottled water is an absolute marketer's game. Like, it is, right. It is marketing paradise. It's the same thing, but how do you spin a different story and sign up distribution? We learnt a lot in bottled water. In fact, we learnt how hard it is to take this dream,
yeah,
and make it a reality. But in answer to your question, we naively thought, well, there'll be a way to make it sustainable.
Mm.
And actually, over time, as our profits and our sales grew, as you found our water in 7-Eleven, Coles, Woolies, everywhere, internally we were at war with ourselves, going, every quote-unquote sustainable option, ultimately, when you look at the full life cycle analysis, it's greenwashing. So we could switch to this so-called biodegradable solution or aluminium, but like the... there are other unintended consequences, and the net benefit may not be good. And if we're an organization that is on a mission to reimagine consumerism, not just like join it and like give a bit of money away, this is not helping our story. And so we thought, we'll just transition it to the perfect solution. And the perfect solution timeline has got longer and longer, and we ended up making a call to pool water, stay with our other products. Reimagine them in the process, and then in time, when we're ready, we'll bring bottled water back. And it was a very big decision, and we'll see where it lands.
Speaking to intelligent performance, that's a really, it's intelligent performance when it comes to getting back to your purpose, right? Mm-hmm. And it's about making that decision that you are purpose first, financial outcome second. Very tricky to run a business like that in a consumer market where you've got everyone else who's playing a different game, right? Jumping to a different tune. What's that been like in terms of just in the terms of the water space, or when you go into hand washing, as an example, when you've got Dove next to you and you've got who name it? Not trying to get you to bag on Dove by any way, but just as an example, you've got the other players who are big, well backed, profit driven, shareholder value. Have much better mechanisms, I would imagine, to raise capital if you've got an entity which isn't, which is fully owned by trust.
Yeah. No shareholders or investors. It's pretty wild.
That's tricky. What's that like when you go toe to toe with them on the shelves?
I mean, that's why we're sitting here. And whilst we've given 18.1 million away, we've had some of our products be a number one in the category. We've had highest loyalty in some categories. We've had, this is my final clickbait, we had a report come out by Nielsen's December 2022 that ranked 248 brands in Australia that operate, so including TikTok, Facebook, everyone, every major brand in the world that operates in Australia, and they ask consumers, how do you perceive them from a sustainability and environmental perspective? And thank you, on that list of 248 brands, I would hope would get in the top 50. We were one above Tesla at number one.
Wow.
And it was like, this is a cool report. It looks like we made it. Like, how did we get here?
Wow.
And as cool as that is, it's been 15 years of like blood, sweat, tears, trying to find a path forward, because it's not easy, because we are up against brands that have a lot of money, and we are in some pretty tough environments. But I mean, this is the work.
Mm.
And really for us, our last 15 years has been in part growing up. I mean, we started when we were 19 and 20 years old.
Mm.
We're Googling how to start a bottled water company, right? When we're still Googling how do you run a bigger company? But like we've learned more. And we're learning more. But you said at the beginning of this, an idea and execution and the values in the execution.
Mm.
So it's been learning how do we execute better. And it's cool, like amazing to see that study of consumer brand perception and where thank you sits, but that isn't revenue and profit. Thank you at number one.
Mm.
Our goal is, I mean, we don't have to be number one, but our goal is to absolutely see thank you as a major profit driver for our purpose. And to get there, we're finding our way forward.
Wow, so much in there in terms of where to take this. So in terms of, Actually, I just want to talk about purpose and in terms of that piece. Mm. When you get a number, like clearly you won the marketing game in the bottled water space, or you were certainly able to compete with the best of them, let's say. And it would have been super tempting at that point to go, well, you know, we're still doing the right-ish thing.
Mm.
You know, like, I guess this is, I really struggle with this point where, you know, if you're going to buy a computer, you need, yeah, maybe you should make, you know, make an environmental choice, but you're still buying a computer, still some harm done.
Yeah.
So how do you think about that piece where even by operating, you still drive a car, you still have to get around, you still fly, you still, you know, you're now trying to expand more globally. How do you think about that where you have to do harm to do good?
It's it's a tension.
I'm going to ask, why did the water bottle thing not pass that test? That's the other piece.
Yeah. It's a tension, and this has been a tension that we've held as a mission-driven, purpose-driven organization from day one.
Mm.
And we're going to hold this tension, I would say, until the end.
Cool.
A great way to reduce all of the issues and the consequences that Thank You as a consumer brand are creating. A great way to do that would be just ask people to donate. Hey, just on an app, just donate. And then we'll give that money away and do good. And then overnight, hey, carbon footprint, there'll be some, but nothing like running a consumer goods business with millions of products every year. Like there'll be, like, what's your water wastage? Yeah, pretty minimal. So in one sense, there it is. I feel like the job would be a lot easier. But the challenge is that as a society, you know, we're generous, but in Australia, quite generous, but still a very small amount of dollars in proportion to that $63 trillion that we spend as consumers is given to causes and impact. And so really, if you looked at your own life and said, my, as a human, as a family, what is our annual consumption? What is our annual giving to charity? Now, some people, the giving will be higher.
Yeah.
But for 99% of the world, it's the opposite. And so we've gone, people already give, that's good. Do we need to jump out on that bandwagon and say, give more, give more, give more? Actually, there is in the world, there's a study done in America, there's 1 million charities in America. That's America. Like the whole world is just, it's hard, too hard to map. There's a lot of that. What there isn't a lot of is globally leading consumer brands that say, switch to this. And not only are we here to give our profit to those who are in the toughest situation in all of the world, but also we're on a journey of reimagining consumption. So if you buy into our personal care range or our cleaning range, today it's better than it was 12 months ago, better than it was 3, 4, 5 years ago. We've just launched a new range of Forever bottles. It's a bottle you buy once. And then when you buy that, you buy our refills and then you refill. And when we map that out, it's like, well, now we're helping all of us consume slightly less. You still have to buy a bottle. But instead of buying a bottle every few months and throwing that out, to which some people are like, yeah, but isn't it recyclable? Well, actually, if you open the lid of probably every hand wash you've ever bought, you'll notice a little spring. And it's that spring that makes that product unrecyclable.
Wow.
Even if someone's claiming, oh, the bottle's recyclable. Sure, the bottle might be. But if the lid goes through and you didn't take the lid off, you have a problem. And if anyone's super inquisitive and you open the new Thank You Forever bottle or our entry-level range, you will not see a spring in that lid, which is an incredible innovation in and of itself. But for us, it's like, and it's more expensive to buy that lid for us. Everyone doesn't know that, but just is. So our job is like, how do we find in what you termed, like, you've got these unintended consequences that are being created. Well, our perspective is they already exist and they are already being fueled by unchecked consumerism. How do we as a brand come into that space and over time get people consuming better, more responsibly? And in that process, any of the money we make, well, that's back to humanity.
So it's really like it's growing the pie. That's what you see. And then growing the pie in a, I mean the growing the pie of the giving pie.
Sure, yes.
Right?
Growing the giving pie whilst getting as much of the existing consumerism pie, but being completely okay if that overall consumerism number started to drop because people aren't consuming maybe as much. And
such a tricky thing, right? So, because we're surrounded by companies who are all about profit, profit, profit,
yeah, yes,
growth, 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 yeah, scale, scale, scale. We put pinups on the newspapers of the people who've just raised the biggest round.
Mm-hmm.
We don't put pinups in the newspaper that you've just withdrawn a product because it wasn't purpose aligned. That sounds like you're going backwards. It sounds like you're shooting yourself in the foot.
Correct. And not only do we not do that, I will just put a little plug in for the papers. What we do is we still try and poke holes in organizations trying to do good. Anyone who put like charity, social enterprise, and we've got little hit pieces out there. Media have just had a crack and it's like, great. All right, guys, we're doing our best at what you've described as a very hard game.
Yeah. So you're saying they're throwing gasoline on the fire to even make your job even harder.
Look, at times,
and pointing out the quote unquote hypocrisy.
At times it's quite challenging. I mean, it's there are definitely days where we've gone, you know what would be easier? Let's just start a for-profit company. Do whatever we want. Literally, yeah. And we'll market it well. It'll feel purposeful, right? We're good marketers, but just do whatever we want. Then we'll take a bunch of the money, and as founders, we'll become philanthropists, right? We're philanthropists now, right? And that is lauded and celebrated.
Yeah.
But we do have a natural skepticism in Australia, which is not all bad, but a little, but not all bad. To often people who would project we're here to do good, come under extra scrutiny. And that's some of that is right, and some of that probably just is clickbait and sells papers.
It's a tricky... Just want to switch to corporate Australia is struggling to engage staff.
Yeah.
It feels like that the new generation, millennials, Gen Z, want purpose,
yeah,
but they're working in a call centre or they're working for an insurance firm and they're looking for purpose, and maybe they're looking for purpose within an organisation. And some would say organisations don't need to be purposeful. That's not the point of them. They're there to, in an insurance firm, to generate a return to provide a product available to a consumer whilst operating profitably. Mm. How do you respond to that with a business needs, like, let's say, or take an insurance firm, let's pick on them. What would you say to the CEO of an insurance firm who's struggling in that space? And kind of pondering, sugar, do we need to turn this into a purpose-led organisation? Is that something you'd be a proponent of?
So, I mean, I would say to that CEO, there is something beautiful that happens for you, the individual, and your team. When you get to turn up and put the majority of your life, which is what we often put our work week into something that has a net benefit for not just you and your family through the money you make through a paycheck, but what you do as an organization has a net benefit to humanity and in some cases an incredible net benefit.
Mm.
There's something very special that happens. And so I would first want to inspire and excite and just say, imagine what that could look like for you. On the other side, I would say, since you have the key role in managing risk, watch out for the insurance company that figures out how to truly unlock purpose for their team in your industry, because that'll be your greatest risk. Because when a group of people come together about an idea bigger than themselves, history is littered with small movements making big change. Like, it wasn't because, oh, they had all the money. No, they didn't have the money. How did that happen? Yeah, innovation. Where does innovation come from? It comes from restriction. Where does, like, remarkable innovation come from? I think it's restriction plus purpose. If you have restriction and purpose, yeah. So I would say ultimately for you and the board, there is a massive risk. And you could think of it like that. It's definitely the wrong way to think about it, but as a backstop, there you go.
What do you mean definitely the wrong way to think about it?
I think any time we lead an organization or ourselves based on fear, I think you're set to fail.
Yeah, right.
But if we lead based on faith and belief and purpose, I think that has more run rate. So that's what I mean.
Awesome. Humanitics comes to mind.
Cool.
In terms of what they're doing, right?
I love Humanitics.
And you, as you will, I had the pleasure of meeting one of the founders when they were just starting out.
Cool.
And I was like, that's such a cool idea.
Yes.
And they were a nobody, and then they got Google, started to back them. And I'll imagine if you're sat at Eventbrite and you're looking at, you know, all of a sudden you start to go, hang on a second.
Like, yeah.
What's this about? Like, and that's kind of highlighting what you're talking about, right?
Well, interestingly, to shout out to Humanitics, the team have done such a great job. So they are, as I understand, the largest in the country.
Okay.
So they are number one in the space of that they're in. So they're still, they may not be bigger than Ticketek, but I hope someone in the comments goes, yes, they are. and I need to fact check this. But they have absolutely dominated because, like, thank you, same model.
Yeah, right.
100% ownership, like, by a trust, profit going, all profit going. Like, these guys are hardcore, and they got into it going, we can disrupt this category for good.
Mm.
And they have. And so, yes.
And it's interesting, when you use for good, you actually mean not just, like, to make a benefit. You're talking about for good, like, the such that the sector will never be the same again. Is that right?
And that, yes, that is exactly. It's a double meaning for good. And you know, that's actually what purpose has the chance to do.
Mm.
For good, like, yes, for humanity, for the good of the team, for the good of morale, for the good of the world, yeah. But also for good, as in category changing. Because there's an event, you're running an independent event around this country, and you had a choice of, do I go with that ticketing company that makes all their money for the shareholders, or that one that gives all its profit for good? And interestingly, just to give credit to their team, and the app experience is better, and it works out better for the event. And so when you start doing the pros and cons list, you're like, but hang on, Humanitics is better on every point. They're not as big as maybe an incumbent yet. Watch out, right? Mm. And there is some market dynamics that can lock up markets. They're not as big yet, but they're definitely better. And how on earth are they better? Why? I think there's a team and they're driven by purpose.
Mm.
So they're innovating better. They're like, how do we create a better experience
for
the mission that we're on? Because if we nail the product, and actually, thank you, we have a secret if anyone's interested. The secret is it's two rules, right? Found it in a book somewhere, a great book, Why Brands That Do Good Matter More.
Right.
And the rule number one, make great product. Rule number two, never break rule one.
Mm.
And rule two has an asterisk, and it says never use a good cause to sell an average product.
Mm.
And so thank you. We are all in the space of how do you make the best product, and how do you bring the best of the best together and encourage them through purpose and for purpose. Let's make your life's, our life's best work.
Mm.
And when you put that to market, that's what wins.
Let's shift gears to marketing, because I think if I think about thank you, what you've done an unbelievable job of is you're like an unbelievable marketer, right? Where you could use your powers for evil. You could be that company like, let's just build the hand washing soap and do the philanthropy model after, and all your sins will be, you know, solved or washed away. How do you think about marketing from a performance, an intelligent performance lens of, like, what do people get wrong about it, or where do you get the real juice?
I have a great conflict with marketing.
Right.
Like a great moral tension, because, and we all know this, we know that marketing for good and can do good and it can do great harm, and, you know, at its extreme levels, wind the clock back and we've got, what have we got? We've got doctors and ads saying smoking is good, I think, at some point. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's, it was great marketing from those companies that ultimately fueled something that wasn't great for humanity.
Yeah.
Maybe. We have a modern day version of that.
Yeah.
Social media, and social media is good for the world, and maybe it's not. Maybe it's killing us and separating us, and that's an interesting point. And so marketing has a great role to play. And I think for me, my view is marketing is not inherently bad. It's a skill. It's how you use it.
Mm.
And I think about marketing more about storytelling,
right?
Authentic storytelling. And what is, for us at Thank You, what is the right story that we should be telling? And then how do we tell it authentically? And the final point is, how do we tell it in a way that will cut through the noise? Mm. And that is very difficult because it's very noisy out there.
Yeah.
And it's getting more noisy. And if you have budget, you can kind of drown out a lot of really good ideas with just big, heavy budgets pushing mediocre advertising and marketing.
Right.
So our job and our role in the marketing team in Thank You is really ultimately the storytelling team in Thank You. I mean, how do we tell this story? The story of the mission, the story of the product, the story of our purpose, and how do we translate that through? And the way we've discovered the best way to tell that story is not to tell people, here's what you can buy, and therefore here's the difference we make. It's the realization that here's the difference you make when you join Thank You. And so I, as Daniel Flynn, as one of the co-founders of Thank You, I'm not Thank You. And our team aren't Thank You. We think we are Thank You.
Cool.
And if you wash your hands this morning with our hand wash,
mm.
whether you knew it or not,
it's we're partnership. Thank You. Wow. The cut-through piece, because I'm sure people would look at your brand and go, God, I wish I could cut through like they do. Mm-hmm. How do you decide, or is it a matter of testing when you're launching a new product, say, let's say hand wash or whatever's coming next for you guys? I feel like nappies would be a great one. I was just
I'm not sure
if you're in there yet.
Yeah,
but how are you thinking about that? Actually, let's pick on the nappy category.
Okay.
How would you approach that? Let's just say, I'm not sure if you are launching this, but you have already.
So, but we can go back into how, because this is really interesting. Sure. Really interesting.
Big sector, massive, big players.
Massive.
How are you thinking about navigating that? What's the story? How do you communicate to a, you know, a single, let's say a household who are not necessarily, just want something which doesn't leak?
So in 2015, we had a really interesting pitch come through the door from some innovators in the nappy category.
Right.
And they said, we've done some testing on the Thank You brand and you have no idea how hard the nappy category is to crack in Australia. Or diapers if you're an international audience. But so you have no idea how hard it is. And the way the world works is you have essentially Huggies countries and Pampers countries.
Right.
And they said that, so they're the two biggest nappy or diaper companies in the world. And in Australia, we're a Huggies country. And the reason we're a Huggies country is Huggies got in first, absolutely dominated the marketing game. Pampers have tried 7 launches in Australia and failed.
Wow.
And this group said to us, we think Thank You is the only brand that could ever top that or change that. And so we're like, yes, let's go. And the more research we did, the more we discovered this is such a difficult category to switch someone.
Right.
Because if a parent has a sleepless night and it's because of the nappy, game over.
Yeah.
And the word of mouth on that,
yeah.
Triple game over.
Absolutely.
And so the reason Pampers, who can make a great nappy, the reason they can't succeed in Australia is word of mouth over generations, over time. Fascinating.
I'll just go with Huggies. They work.
So a long story short is in 2016, January, we launched a crowdfunding campaign. We said, hey, everybody, we've got the hand wash, the body washes. At the time, we had a food range and water. We said, we want to take Thank You to new categories, but we need more money to do it. So we want to go new categories and new countries. And in the video, we said the next category we want to go into is nappies, baby products, baby care. And then we want to take Thank You to New Zealand. But to do those two things, we've estimated we need about 1.2 million, so 600 grand each. And we explained how tough the category was in nappies, how the big brands can kind of work. And anyway, we said we're launching a book called Chapter One, and 100% of the profit from Chapter One, this book, will fund these ideas. And so we went to our consumers for two reasons. One, we needed money. But two, we needed something I think even more valuable, buy-in.
Got you.
So that book was sold at a pay-what-you-want price in airport bookstores and online. A best-selling book, for context, is 5,000 copies, and you'd be lucky to make 50 grand profit. In 2 hours, we made $360,000. In 28 days, we smashed the target. We hit $1.44 million profit, 55,000 copies of the book sold.
Wow.
Today, over 150,000 copies. But what was even cooler than the book's being sold, I think, and that was cool on a lot of levels. And if you're interested, the most paid was $50,000. was 10 grand, then 50. Lease pay was 5 cents.
It is a perfect example of a cut through in a crowdfunding campaign. Yeah, right.
But interestingly, when the nappies hit the shelf a few months later, we had people buying the nappies off the shelf that weren't even parents. They'd crowdfunded to get that product there, and then they were giving it out. In fact, for the launch of the nappy range, we launched in such a backwards way. So we didn't have the money to do the like big stuff. So instead, we just asked people who backed the book, we're like, would you host a gathering at your home and invite friends who are parents or soon to be parents? And so 500 people around the country hosted parties. It would have had, we estimate, well over 5,000 people in attendance. We played a video from Nepal talking about the impact in the first projects in Nepal helping maternal infant health programs, and people sat and they watched that. Then we booked out a cinema tour around the country. People came and watched the thing, and then we launched, and everyone industry-wise thought, thank you, we'll never crack this one. Well, in 3 months, we got 10% market share of the subcategory we're in. That doubled our business overnight.
Wow.
But it sent a message to the biggest companies in the category that we mean business, and this is really serious. And so what happened for us over the next 2 years was like nappy wars. One of the big brands went from 17 weeks a year on promotion to about 33 weeks. Half price. Number two brand followed. And that price war ultimately over time drove us to a point of, this is unprofitable. We cannot sustain this. And if we keep trying, we're going to end not our nappy business, all of thank you.
Right.
And so pulling that product and having that sort of, that was a hard day.
Yeah.
Because as a brand, and there was a beautiful study that showed 400 families who'd never trialed a nappy, they gave us the lowest net promoter score in the category, right? So, which makes sense. We're the water hand wash people. How do you make a nappy? Post-trial, we were 2 points above Huggies. And marketers in our business from like L'Oreal and Unilever are like, this, we've never seen a brand that can shift someone. So as a brand and as storytellers, we know the brand can shift. One of our challenges has been, okay, so they're the strengths, but ultimately how do we not just survive, but sustain growth, profitable growth? If this wasn't about profit, we could keep running nappies and just sort of, it'd sound good on a podcast, but this is about profit to impact. So that led a long journey of how do we do this, and will we be back in nappies one day? We talk about it a lot, maybe. But on the day we are, it will be not just a great innovative product. The back end behind it will be able to sustain the fight.
How, though, are you now building for sustaining the fight? Because I feel like what you just talked about, market dynamics, big players, incumbents, big budgets, could do that in any category you're in.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you think about making it, or how do you build a system which is sustainable?
So in the book, chapter 2, which is not written yet and not released, you're going to read a bunch of wild stories of how far that book went and actually how uncomfortable it got for us as co-founders.
Right.
Because we found ourselves, I was speaking at an event in Germany to people from 165 countries, 25,000 people in the room. It was amazing. It's translated to 10 languages while I talked, which...
25,000 people in the room?
In one room.
Wow. Stadium?
Not a stadium, but a massive room. We spoke in some stadiums and had interviews with remarkable people, and I don't want to name drop too much, but there was an interview in Chicago with a certain President Obama, and there's the name drop. It's a 23-minute interview where he's asking about thank you and like, how'd you get in the supermarkets? And I gave him a copy of chapter one, and he got a hand wash. He's one of the first people in America to have thank you hand wash. Like,
wow.
It's just so that was cool, right? We're like, this is going to go to the world. And his question, which was beautiful, is like, Daniel, markets are global now. So how are you thinking about getting into more countries and more categories? But the background to that question is the idea of thank you is, like you said at the start, so easy. The execution is so hard. And we went through a massive transformation 2019, started in 2018, but 2019, 2020. We had to reimagine not our product, but how we operated from the inside out. We'd basically on the edge of burnout. My co-founder and wife, Justine, was in burnout. 3 months in bed. It was wild.
Wow.
And we took 2 months off from the business, and I read a book, and this book, a leader had gone through burnout and he ended up in hospital. And
what's the book?
Leading on Empty.
Right.
And this particular leader, he asked this question. He said, what's your 5%? The bit that only you can do. And he proposed in leadership, which I think is a cool principle for all of us, 85% of what you do, someone else can do.
Mm.
10% of what you do, someone who you hire, a trained apprentice, can do. And this leaves the 5%, the bit you're born for, the bit that only you can do. And then he said his bit, like his five. And I was like, oh, that's confronting, because he talks about his faith, his relationship with his wife, his relationship with his kids, his health, his eating. He's like, I can't outsource any of that. I'm like, oh, no. Oh, no. Because in my head, my 5%, I was already doing. When Justine read it, she's like, oh, I know. But both of us were confronted of like, okay. He said, so there's a bit left that I can bring to the organization. I better make sure that I'm bringing the bit that only I can bring.
Wow.
Because if and we all do it, if I go into the 95%, I do it at the direct cost of the five. The direct cost of the things that matter most, which is why in leadership we see this huge burnout of everything from marriages to relationships with kids and health. And so as a leadership principle, very, very, very profound.
Mm.
But then we looked at thank you. And when we got back from this time off, we were like, thank you is trying to do 100%. If you walk through our old office, we had 60 staff full time. You would have seen our innovation team. You would have seen our finance team look like a small accounting firm. Our design team was like 10 designers. It was super cool, but we were doing everything in-house because we were special and we had this secret sauce. And then began a project we called Project Salvation, which is after the nappy challenge.
Mm.
And it wasn't just the nappies in New Zealand. You could have mapped the sales growth exactly the same. We went straight up in New Zealand and then we got smashed by every competitor. And it was like, when are we getting the rest of the product to President Obama? Well, we can't even get it to New Zealand properly. So we reimagined, well, what if 85% of what we did, we got someone else to do that bit and they were just good at, like, the nuts, like the sales, the distribution, the managing retailers. There are companies that can do that really well. And then the 10% that we think is really special, what if we highly integrated with a global leading design firm instead of just trying to do it all ourselves? And And so we redesigned thank you, and it was confronting because it means as a team we'd go from not 60 to 600 as a global business, but from 60 to like 15 for a global business. And so then we analyze who's out there. We found different people, and eventually we landed it going, to win in nappies, you don't have to be the biggest. They say it's not the big that eat the small, it's the fast who eat the slow. But to be fast, you have to be focused. And you have to be focused on one thing. And at thank you, we were waking up focused on nappies, hand wash, water. We had a food range at one point. In fact, we deleted our food range from retailers because we said, we have to win this nappy thing. We have to put all our focus in. And then we lost the nappy thing.
Oh, God.
Like, it's like chapter two is going to start heavy, man. There'll be teardrops on the page. It'll be like, I'm just be crying while I'm writing. And it's this journey of like, yes, we aspire to be bigger, but first we had to get better, designed right from the inside. And so we developed a new plan and we called it Engine 2 internally. Engine 1 was the way we built and we needed to learn a lot. Mm. Engine 2 is about highly integrated partnerships. So any country we move in, instead of setting up a local team, who is our local partner for distribution and manufacturing, any category we enter, is there someone who specializes in nappies and actually maybe through a brand licensing partnership, that team can wake up every single day thinking about one thing. How do you win in the nappy category?
Got you.
And that would leave our little team of 15 to focus on thank you's 5%, which we have stated as these five things to keep it simple. One, vision, mission, strategy. Something that only we can do. We can get help with it, but we need to drive that.
Mm.
Number two, our giving. So where the money goes, and we back charities and change makers, and how we give is quite revolutionary, but we're responsible for that bit. That's part of our 5%. Innovation, ideation, that is where most of the value is. When we spot a gap in a market, or we wonder, but what if you flipped it? What if you changed it? That our history, the value is created there. And then in storytelling, telling the story of that and the purpose. And then finally, point number five in our 5%, we're like, well, if we're going to partner with a whole bunch of other companies, we better get really good at partnership selection and management. So now these are the five disciplines internally we focus on. And if a job is outside that, we need a great partner to focus on that. So now we have about 50 partnerships so far from like leading design firms. We have three innovation houses who are bringing globally the best innovation forward to Thank You. Like our new cleaner that just launched is the first of its kind. It's 100% natural, hospital-grade disinfectant. That hasn't existed before. To get hospital-grade, you need chemicals. That's come from, we're sticking to our five. We'll tell that story every single day of the week. And from the product side, we'll give the profit. But we have an innovator who wakes up every day thinking about one category. So it's a long answer to your question that I think in time people are going to see Thank You back. We'll be back in water. We'll be back in some things that maybe we'd left. But we're back not just with a new product, but a redesigned way to sustain it at scale.
Wow. If that wasn't your answer for intelligent performance, it could have been in terms of like that 5% piece, right? Because I think that's the thing you can't replicate. And that's humbling, isn't it, when you think about, yeah, I can't outsource eating, I can't outsource dadding or parenting, I can't outsource my friendships. And then you're like, crikey, that's got to be 3%, right?
Totally, yeah.
And so really you're talking about the 2%. And a company at a company level, if you're making hand soap as an example, then yeah, you're pretty much doing exactly the same 98%. And then it's that little film which is going on the front, which is different, right?
And maybe some of the ingredients, or maybe taking the spring out of the lid. You know, maybe there's some ideas, but yeah.
But you would call it semantics to some degree,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Incremental, but it's really it's really powerful, that. And I think, yeah, that would definitely speak to, that's what bringing in an intelligent performance piece as well, and that comes right back to purpose. Mm-hmm. I want to do one thing which I had the pleasure of sitting in front of you in an audience, listening to your incredible keynote. There were two regrets from that speech for me. Mm-hmm. The first one for me is I didn't stand up, and obviously I would have been the first person to give you a standing ovation, mm-hmm. because I think I was shocked that there wasn't, actually, because I thought it was an extraordinary story. And I look back and go, man, I should have been the one. That's my first regret. The second one is you didn't spend a lot of time talking about giving and about where it goes. Because $18.1 million is a significant amount. That's more than what most people give in a lifetime. Significantly more, I would imagine. Can you tell us about what that's journey been like?
It's been a parallel journey of challenge where just as hard as it is to try and sustain at scale against big incumbents, to give effectively is to. And you wonder, how hard could giving be? I mean, the early days, some charities wouldn't take the money because they're like, what do you want from us? Or we don't want anything, we just want to try and give you money. Like, are you trying to leverage off our brand? We're like, well, no, we're just trying to give you money. And so that was weird. We got through that phase and had all of them end up coming back to us many times saying, yeah, could we? So as Thank You grew, that wasn't an issue, but what very quickly became an issue, and I'm very grateful to some of our early team who had an amazing eye for this, an amazing mind, an intelligent performance mind when it came to international development. We discovered there's a lot of bad in the good space. One village in Cambodia, we walked through it. And it was our first trip to the field, and we'd funded a well, and I thought we'd failed. I thought we'd caught our partner out. Because we'd funded a well, but in that walk, we saw three other wells. I'm like, what? And kind of sheepishly, but like not, I said to our partner, I said, hey, cool, we've funded a well. Why are there three wells here? Like, this feels unnecessary. And he's like, oh, you saw them. Yeah. He's like, let's go for a walk. And we walk to one well, and when it was dug, it hit a bed of arsenic, and people got arsenic poisoning from that well. Big charity name on it. And arsenic poisoning is worse than just normal dirty water issues. The next well was built during wet season. So in dry season, when you really need it, it's a dry well. There's no water. The third one was mechanical. So even if we went to repair that, it would cost more than building a locally sourced, locally repairable new water program. And that was an interesting day. It was like, man. And there's a lot of that. 40% of wells in the world are broken. 40%.
Wow. So there's like, so what you're saying is there's so much to it.
There's so much to it. There is
like
so
just,
much to it.
Just send the money.
There's so much.
Build a well. All's good.
And so, I mean, the answer's kind of cool too, though, because just like we would say, well, what is the answer to medical breakthrough or, you know, entrepreneurship, business breakthrough?
Mm.
Great teams with great visions, with that focus to get a breakthrough. And so we look for those sorts of organizations and we back them. And so if you jump onto thankyou.co, you're going to see, on there currently about 18 of the most amazing, innovative organizations who are data-driven, who have remarkable teams, who are impact-focused, not activity. Small difference.
What do you mean?
Activities like we built 10 health clinics, and maybe through those 10 health clinics each year we're doing 500,000, you know, health checkups.
Mm.
That's activity. Impact is before we came into this community, this was maternal death rate, this was infant death rate. Now, after our intervention of health clinics and health checkups, maternal infant death rate is down. That's impact.
Right.
And it's a journey to get there.
Mm.
And it takes a lot of work. Because sometimes the step you take you may think helps, doesn't help, and you have to pivot. So we look for people that are focused on impact. We look for organizations that have an exit strategy. Like how once this whole thing is set up, how does it sustain without perpetual philanthropy?
Yeah.
So our partners work for everything from backing local entrepreneurs and giving early stage grants of $10,000, $20,000 right through to groups like IJM who are thinking about system change and thinking about modern day slavery and how to end it.
Wow.
Through to, co-impact. I mean, these guys, are their theory of change is amazing because they realize all these big foundations in the world who want to do good keep hitting up the same innovative charities. So that charity is having to do like 10 bits of due diligence, 10 reports. What if we co that impact?
Mm.
We do one set to release them to do more of the good they should be doing. And so, you know, there are so many different ways to tackle water, health, food, microfinance, farming. And so we're just here to find them and back them.
Wow. How has your thinking changed around giving?
So in 2020, we released a video and a report titled "The Giving System's Broken." We, thank you, helped break it. And in the report, in this report and video, we talked about Open Road Alliance, and they did this amazing study. And in the study, it was confronting, shockingly confronting. It said 46% of issues that charities and NGOs face come from the donor. And I'm like, this is not... Who wrote that?
Yeah.
And 4% of the issues that they face come from things like theft or corruption. And I would say the average person probably thinks it's the inverse.
Mm, 100%.
And we looked at this going, the donor? And there is a thing that we've called and others call the donor dysfunction. And it's essentially the power imbalance of money.
Mm.
Money brings incredible power with it.
Mm.
And there's some unintended consequences of that. And the analogy that got this over the line for me, and it really helped me, was imagine a heart surgery. Imagine if you needed heart surgery and I said I'll pay for it, which would be nice and generous.
Mm.
But it'd be weird if I then told the heart surgeon, hey, it's my money. Here's how I want you to do the heart surgery on Michael.
Yeah, that would be weird.
It'd be weird. And in fact, we would say that's irresponsible.
Plain wrong, yeah.
Plain wrong. And actually, it would break code and it would, yeah.
Just a really bad idea.
Too. Right.
Yeah.
So that's in medicine. Then in business, I couldn't call up Elon Musk. He'd be probably too busy to take the call, but I wouldn't be able to get onto a team member there and be able to land this idea of I've just invested my money and I don't want any of my money that I just put in as a new shareholder to go to marketing.
Mm.
Or I don't want it to go to an idea that might fail. I only want it to go to the ideas that will work because it's my money. That phone would be hung up on me, as it should be.
Yeah.
So in business and in medicine, we've set these two worlds free simply by going, you become the best at what you do, we'll back it. And if that heart surgeon's rate and death rate is low, they won't get a job.
Mm.
People won't get them to do the work.
Mm.
In the charity sector, unfortunately, we're in the Stone Ages, Dark Ages, where there's not much innovation. because people are afraid and can't fail because donors don't want them to fail. We have charities who can't do very good marketing because, well, the money we just got from donor A has to go straight to the field. They want none to go to admin. I mean, call Facebook. Say you want none of your money to go to admin. It just, it's like, so at Thank You, we do what's called unrestricted funding. We are not the first at this table, but we have joined a seat at the table of unrestricted funding, which is we say we do full due diligence on our organization. We look at their past performance, their future vision, their team capability. Then we back them unrestricted. We write the check. They can spend it however they decide because this is their call, not our call.
Mm.
We've had partners call us going, hey, we're thinking of doing this and this and this, but it's high risk. It might not work. What do you guys think? We're like, it's not our decision.
Mm.
And actually one group that ended up doing this sort of high risk, we're not sure if it'll work, but it'll be about a $2 million investment. And if it works, it will attract even more funding. It worked. End up attracting over $400 million US of philanthropic money from the whole sector. Wow. Because they got the hyper. And we were the little funder that funded that bet.
Mm.
And this is what the sector needs. So thank you. We're unrestricted funders. And, you know, if an organization doesn't perform over time, just like if a company didn't or a heart surgeon didn't, you know, we'll be out.
Reminds me of Dom Pym. I'm not sure if you've come across him, founder of Up Bank.
Mm.
He has a family office and he plays almost like a government does. You know, he sees his investment thesis is if I place a dollar, I want it to create like $10 in that sector. So he backs crowdfunding platforms, he backs climate initiatives. He'll often be willing to go first.
Cool.
And put the money in first because it's typically a really tricky thing to do if you're raising capital, as I'm sure you know. So, yeah, really powerful ethos around that. Phenomenal guy, if you haven't come across him. Where I want to just finish this conversation, given the time, I want to touch on Facebook, actually, because we know a lot about them. They would attest, you know, you hear Zuckerberg talk about purpose when he shares, you know, he's about bringing communities together, connecting the world. He certainly has. And there's the other side of that now.
Mm.
But they would be probably attest to be a purpose-led company.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think about an organization like that where they're purpose-led, but, you know, we're really starting to see the ramifications of mental health issues and we're all addicted to our mobile phones and we prefer to look at videos than look at our children. What's your take on that?
Look, I think I should start by saying it is so easy to sit in a room with a microphone and just take pot shots at, you know, how big companies getting it wrong. And, people would do that to us and it's an easy thing to do. But I do think this is a moment in history that will be looked back on very, very, very closely. In fact, I heard someone describe it as this will not be known as the tech generation and what it will be known as the social media era because of how fundamentally disruptive and possibly destructive this has become. And so Facebook, ultimately, I have no doubt for Mark when he started it, great idea. And even now it's, hey, this is about purpose and we can point to some good that's being done. But to me, Meta and Facebook and Meta, the parent company, along with a lot of sectors, this is a great picture of what happens when we have something called unchecked capitalism. At the end of the day, I would comfortably sit here and say and have a chat with anyone and debate with anyone around Meta's purpose. And ultimately it's to increase shareholder value, full stop, at all cost. And what I mean at all cost is I mean at the cost of teenage girls dying. I mean, that cost. At the cost of splitting communities, not bringing the world together but driving them apart, at that cost, at all cost. And that's proven not in like that accidentally has happened. It happened. Facebook discovered it, their own research. We only know this because of, you know, whistleblower like Frances Haugen and some others over time who've leaked the reports to say that we knew this but we kept going. And we kept going at trying to get attention. And, yeah, there are teams set up to try and, like, minimize the risk. I think what's happening right now with America and the way that the government is holding not just Meta but all social media companies to account, it's quite impressive. For the protection of children and democracy, social media companies are getting hammered.
Mm.
And I think they feel it's completely unfair.
Mm.
And I wish this was 5 years earlier. I think we would, as a society, be better off if it was 5 years earlier. And the challenge we've got is that you have a company ultimately driven by capturing attention. And by doing that, this increases shareholder value, and you know, that works. And so, yes, it might be harming people, but we've got to keep growing and we've got to show growth. And I think that's really, really challenging. To be purpose-led, I would say, is really simple. Hey, team. Hey, shareholders. We've got a problem. There is some unintended consequences and harm from what we're doing here. So we're going to dial the algorithm back. It's not great for attention, but it is better ultimately for the community we exist to serve and say that we serve.
Mm.
And then in time, we'll figure out how to become more valuable. But the reason I think they can't do that, even if they want to do that, is ultimately they have to keep going that way. Bigger, 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 bigger.
Mm.
And they might argue if we don't, someone else will, and we'll try and be responsible in the process. And so it's a great dilemma. It's a great challenge. But yeah, purpose intentions without a shadow of a doubt. Purpose led, absolutely not.
Daniel Flynn, thanks so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.